and/or by raising your hand and identifying yourself within the Zoom app during public comment. All other persons may sign up if they are able to appear in the room, provided there is sufficient space to accommodate those who care to make a physical appearance. A person representing a group must identify themselves and the group when calling. When your name is called, if you are in the room, please stand and state your name in a clear, audible tone. And if you are appearing by Zoom, when your name is called, please respond clearly and audibly after your microphone is unmuted.
Okay, so do we have anyone sign up for public comments on agenda action items online? Is there anyone who would like to raise their hand to comment on agenda action items? Okay. Do we have anybody signed up for in the room comments on agenda action items?
There's no one signed up in
the room. Okay. Okay. Moving on. First order of business, EHC action items. Resolution 3315, approval of tenant accounts receivable write-offs, June 2025. I think Mr. Jensen can make some comments.
Sure. Thank you very much. So I want to make sure at this point that before we top of this item, we introduce our new CFO. So for those who are unaware, our former CFO, Luke Joseph, I say thank you for your service. Really appreciate the time you've spent with the agency helping us stabilize and get stronger. But I also want to welcome our new CFO, Nicolette Carlone. Nicolette comes to us from the being CFO generally, but you've got a couple of key points on your tour that I wanted to make sure you highlighted. Can you say a few words about your experience?
Sure. Thank you, Arthur. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, commissioners. I'm glad to be here. I'm excited, and I'm back in Detroit. My other project was the Public Lighting Authority. Started out as a CFO, ended up as a CEO, and we turned on all the lights. So I'm very proud of that, and I'm excited to be here and help with the public housing.
Thanks. I think the idea was for you to just say a few words about this item and then we've got a more detailed presentation that Irene's going to lead the rest of
us. Yes, thank you. I am working with the tenant accounts receivable with the team trying to accomplish our goal to get the results that we're looking for to clean up the accounts receivable. I understand that Irene has been spearheading this project and gaining traction and results along the way, and I look forward to working with her and gaining that momentum with you, Irene, once again.
Okay, absolutely. So thank you for that, and I will just say that it's a team behind this force, which includes Joanne on your team, who's doing a really significant, great job, Joanne Hurst, and the co-lead is Sheree Leslie. So getting on to the resolution, today, humble board, as we asked last month for you to do a pre-approval up to $1 million of write-offs, as Commissioner Aaron changed or revised that agreement to say anything that was any tenant receivable that was prior to July 1st, 2024, we were given permission to do that. That number came out to be roughly a little over $600,000. And these are tenants that have vacated. They're no longer in the program. This was a corporate hygiene initiative, going through cleaning, making sure that the balances were correct. They weren't charged rent subsequent to them moving out. And that was a series of adjustments so that when their balances went to the collection agency, it was true and had been re-verified. So that was roughly, if you look at page 19, the total there, and I have to put my, I got trifocals, right? I don't know what's going on every day it changes. But if you look at page 19, $663,000 was the net number that was written off for receivables prior to July 1st, 2024. Yes, ma'am.
You have a magnifying glass.
I need all of the above. It depends on what day it is. Other than on Sundays, I can see everything. I'm working on it. We're on live TV, so let's keep going. Oh, it's hard for you to read, right? So we'll. So I'm so sorry. So we can get you a print of you. I'm sorry.
You know what I do, Mr. Williams? I do my phone, and then I put it down.
And your tablet, and your tablet. So maybe we can print her a copy during this meeting so that she could see it. I don't know who can print that off for her. But these are tenants who are no longer in the program, had left 2021, 2022, 2023. We cleaned all of their information up. It's not going unresonated that they still owe balances. The finance team are in the process or have sent that off to the collection agency. And so that they just, you know, when they left, I mean, they were evicted. Unless they deceased, you know, of course that goes away, right? But and that's what this shows. So it was 663. Today, we're asking for July 1st, 2024 to June 30th. To be, again, these are in the participated tenants who either unfortunately died, they were evicted, or they just said, I'm moving on. So with that, that was $97,000, and that's page 20. And so the on page 13, the resolution reads $760,000. It is a combined total of those two. You previously gave us pre-approval on a one-time basis. We duly noted that. And it helped us clean things up so that we can look at balances. We're constantly working through this on the AI eviction prevention project team. So it's $760,000, but technically you're approving $97,000. You gave us pre-approval up to $1 million prior to 7/1/2024. But we just made sure we had the holistic to get us back all on the same page, the holistic amount. These are tenants that have vacated and no longer in the property. So it's a massive cleanup. It's going back a series of years.
I have a couple questions. So a couple things stood out for me on this. I'm glad you guys did this purge. Mm-hmm. Clearly Diggs is a pretty significant amount. We have a lot of big balances there. Mm-hmm. Are we specifically addressing the management issue there? Like, it shocks me that we would allow balances to get that high.
Yeah, so if you recall, last year we were talking about hybrid. Mm-hmm. Hybrid, we worked with our legal counsels, both union and non-union, to talk about this. And the hybrid management was the solution. Giving it all away and letting it manage, it's not where we want to go in the future. We're talking about DHC expertise with the property management, along with mostly, you know, our maintenance techs, who are very seasoned and know how to work on a lot of our aged buildings and know the tenants, more importantly, have relationships with our residents. So short answer is yes, it's being addressed, has been addressed, and we're still in the process of corporate hygiene. A lot of trainings have happened. We're still trying to move. This is a very difficult market, I will say. It's not an excuse, but even our partner is having trouble with maintaining a staff and hiring people who, if we do hire or think we hire, we can refer to our HR director here, maybe the background checks don't come out well. And so we're finding a lot of that as well. So it's definitely a problem. We knew that property management overall for DHC was an issue. We've been working closely with our deputy director of real estate management, Tiffany, who has joined RENS in 2023. I've been working with her since I started, and is doing a phenomenal job. So as we continue on with this corporate cleansing, identifying weaknesses within our programs, working with our compliance officer, Sheree Leslie, to your answer, yes. And we still have more work to do, as this AR eviction prevention project has shown.
My other question was, I thought this must have been a typo. There's a $45,000 accrual at Scatter Site West at...
What page are you on?
I'm sorry, I'm on 17.
Uh-huh.
Column, put on number. So from the right, going left.
Yeah, yeah.
1, 2, 3, yeah. Top, sort of center right.
Mm-hmm.
45,933.60 at $1,097 a month. They were paying rent for 42 months.
Absolutely. This is, again, cleanup, right? So these have been vacated. And although maybe in our management side of the and Yardi, we stopped it and picked, we stopped it. We only found out of all of this 23 instances where it was not caught. So out of the over like 450 items, it just was an administrative exercise to clean the subledger out on the finance side. So you did have numbers ranking, and then you had an allowance, of course, booked against it, so the net book was zero, right? However, when we looked, you know, it's just cleaning up corporate hygiene. That's all I'm gonna say. This stuff is dating back many, many years. And so on the operation side, it may have been correct in Yardi, per se, where, you know, the PIC was updated, the person had in the participation. So if you look at, and I do wanna say, if you look back at the recertification, the Lincoln recertification process, this is all stemming from that. And again, when I talk about there's been reform, and yep, great job to the people who came in 2023, but I want to say wonderful job for those who have stayed, kept the lights on prior to 2023, because some of these initiatives started then, but they just didn't have the cavalry to come in and help them. So if you look at various charts that's in your current board packet that shows about recertifications, you saw in 2022 that there was a massive, you know, initiative to take down the delinquent recerts, because it was over, you know, 1,000, right? And so these, to me, this is the knock-on impact where the finance side, like we sampled some files and we were looking through it and we saw the move-out packets just there. It just didn't resonate back to the finance team. Whatever the breakdown was, I'm not sure, but going forward, this should not be a problem.
So that was gonna be my question. In these numbers, so let's just take that like extreme outlier, that 45,000, I was an eviction. We show the lease period from 95 to 2024, so in there for 19 years. Is that 45,000 actual rent that was owed up through the eviction date, or is that functionally a fictitious accrual that was happening because we didn't book the move out, but we were still accruing the rent? And so that was actually never rent that was owed, because the person was gone at that point. So we terminated occupancy.
So two things happened, Aaron, and I'm explaining it this way. When we went through, we, the AR eviction prevention team, project managers, Jack, we had to look at every record. And we had to process adjustments. And so those adjustments to what you said, we had to adjust that was not what was not truly owed. This 45,000 should represent what's going to go to the collection agency. So it may have been, you know, accruals up to June of this year. We had to go back and take those out. We had to do a paper form. We agreed with the CFO's office and write out all those late fees, reduce those late fees that happened after they truly left the premises that may have been still accruing in the financial subledger. So those have been adjusted out, and that was over, we sent over 400 forms, and this was all paper. We moved into the cloud, but this was all paper, and that's why I'm giving kudos to Joanne Hertz, who sits in the finance team under the leadership of NEVA, because of the fact that she had to process all that. The AR Eviction Committee, you know, you guys know you're great, you know who we are, but we have to leverage our relationships across the entire organization. And that's why we came to this humble board and asked, can we clean this out so we can get good reports out of the system for this purpose? So this 45,000 should represent what this tenant owed at
the
time.
The real number.
That should be the real
the
number.
Reverse, this is not the reverse.
This is net of all the different adjustments. Adjustments was part of normal business practices. We estimated it would be about 900,000, right? But we took out the adjustments. The net is the 663,000 on page 19.
Okay.
I ask one question. The difference between a tenant initiated versus an eviction is every property manager use the same process to evict?
Ideally, the answer is yes. It starts, we follow our ACOP. We should be following our ACOP, which is our plan that HUD has approved, and it's HUD regs. So it should start with a 10-day notice, okay? And a lot of people like our manager here who has done a wonderful job. He's an excellent right hand from the Ernest. It starts with that. And then after, you know, some people may say, you know, I'm not paying. The gig is up, I'm leaving. Others might stay to the very end.
Okay.
And they have to go through the legal process working with our wonderful Angelique Smiley and team.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Thank you, so.
All right.
2022.
Any other questions? If not, I will call for a motion to approve resolution. Pass it. 3315. Can I get a motion?
Motion. I thought you were gonna read it.
Oh, you want me to read it?
No, you don't have to.
Ms. Williams, you have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions on resolution 3315? Yeah. That's the lesson. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to the next agenda item, resolution 3316. Good news, execution of grant agreement from the Rocket Community Fund for the Skyward Sag Home Worship Program.
So commissioners, thank you. So what you have before you is a request to allow us to enter into an agreement with Rocket Community Fund for initiative we are working on in the Skyward Sag program. So for those who don't know, we have a Skyward Sag co-housing program where wherein families live in single-family houses that the Housing Commission operates. Unfortunately, this portfolio has been very difficult for us to manage and maintain for a range of reasons. And so we've really struggled, honestly, with the specific parts of the management process, like human turnaround, et cetera, with this portfolio, because unlike another development that might have 400 units of, that are very common, each individual house has its own unit turnaround issues. However, this is a very important asset. Each of these houses is home to someone. Each of these houses has rental assistance associated with it, and each of these houses also has an intrinsic value of the house. So what we engaged Rocket Community Fund about was, is there a way for us to first try to make these homes home to the tenants who've been living in them? Second, how do we make sure we capture the rental assistance that's been used in other parts of the portfolio? And third, how do we get value of the house? Greg and Tyler, I'd love for you to talk further about it, but I just wanted to make sure they had a little background on it before we got into this current point.
Sure. So we are coming before you today to seek your approval to enter into a grant, agreement with Rocket Community Fund. You would have an attachment with the grant, but we do not have it yet, so we expect that in the next couple of weeks, and we'll get the copy to each of you when we have that. So we've really, in addition to what Arthur was saying, you know, our goal in the department is to dispose of all of our scattered sites. So we've broken that down into essentially a two-pronged strategy, starting with our vacant structures, but then also our occupied. And so this grant will help fund the homeownership program. We're working in partnership with Denise and team with Resident Services to make sure that the FSS tenants have opportunity to purchase their home if they so choose. So the grant gets triggered for vacant sites if you have up to, if it's near occupiable and up to about $60,000 in rehab expenses to get it up to HQS standards. And so if the tenant wishes to purchase one of those homes, then that would trigger the grant. If it is an occupied site, that same $60,000 threshold applies as well. And so in either scenario, a tenant can get up to $60,000 in repairs, and then the funding will also be towards down payment assistance match. So we're working closely, as I mentioned, with Denise's team to build out the program. And Greg, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I think you covered it.
Happy to answer any questions.
Why don't we, I'll take a motion, and then we'll do discussion. So can I get a motion to approve resolution 3316?
So moved.
Support.
All right, questions? Commissioner Rencher?
Yeah, so just wanted to know how many single-family scattered site units are we referring to?
In total? A little over 200, you have that number?
Yeah, it's 197 right now.
joints are lots, the difference is lots. So she's right with the 200, but they're like vacant lots, so he's correct, it's about 197.
Of occupied.
Occupied is about 197.
That is, sorry, that is structures. Occupied is pulling around 155, but that obviously is always kind of moving.
Okay, okay. And who's gonna work with, who essentially, is it gonna just be a part of the FSS program?
For the homeownership piece?
Yes.
And then for the vacants, what I did not mention, is we are working on an MOU agreement with the Detroit Land Bank Authority to utilize them essentially as brokers. So all the vacant sites will be handled through the land bank, and, you know, any sort of sales proceeds will come back to the DHC for a commission fee to the land bank.
Okay, so the question I asked about if it's going through the FSS program, because I was also looking at the end of the packet where it showed how many people are in the pipeline currently in FSS. And I don't know how long that pipeline has existed.
The pipeline for FSS that exists, well, it's a 5-year program. So for each participant, and whenever they enroll, they're in the program for 5 years. But we also are opening the opportunity for not just FSS participants to purchase these homes, but as well HCV and any LIPH that may be interested and are qualified.
And Donald's referencing page 31, table at the bottom.
So the people in the pipeline will also have the opportunity. Because I'm also just wondering how long a typical FSS it takes, because I know it's
a 5-year program, so it really depends on how invested they are in searching for jobs and finding higher paying jobs to increase their escrow. And so what we have found, actually what we have is people, it typically takes LIPH residents a good 2 years to like really get kicked in, but we have a lot of opportunities now, so we're getting a lot more people involved. We have a lot of different training careers in them, so it's moving up a little faster. People are enrolling.
So will this, the people in this program, you're saying it'll be around 5 years before they come
dealing
with the down payment system?
I was just saying how long the program is.
Yeah.
Right now, we have, we actually have 84 that are employed, and we have a total of 40 right now that are escrowing.
Right.
So they're already escrowing, so they can take their funds right now and put towards purchasing a home, but then with the down payment assistance. So we're active, the FSS and the home ownership program are tied together.
Okay.
So as they are learning about FSS, they also enroll in the home ownership program.
Okay.
Once you're enrolled in home ownership program, you're automatically assessed and then assigned to home buyer classes or what have you, whatever you need to move you up to the purchase, the point of purchasing or looking for a home. So it's a evolving wheel that just keeps going right now.
And one of the things we've been collaborating with the resident services team on is to just a set of criteria for how you prioritize the groupings of tenants, right? So whether it's based on current escrow balance availability, we're kind of establishing like a checklist of how we're going to group, because you know, you can't ever hit everybody at once. So do we group them, you know, 10 or aim for 10 a year based on a certain set of criteria?
Okay. Hey, there was an ability to, and then we want to do this correctly, like if they really get these people in their houses and own it like quickly. So you don't know how long the process is, but the home ownership counseling, and they can check the box, but
yeah,
they got the DBA.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a whole process. Actually, there is like a whole process. So we call it in process, but it is categorized because you have people that are, They may be qualified, but they're not working yet. So then we get them a job. You have people that are working, and they have savings already. So then they're ready to start shopping. So if they're ready to start shopping, they can look at the scattered site homes as well as any other homes in the market. But we keep that rolling on a consistent basis. But when they're done with the home buyer classes, then they move to shopping because they've already been pre-qualified and pre-approved in the home buyer process.
Will you share the standard operating procedures that
yes,
they help they create?
Yes, we do have SOPs, correct.
For your background.
Thank you. Commissioner Williams, any questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Tyler, just quickly, because we have had a lot of discussion about redevelopment of the portfolio, RAD, et cetera, can you just quickly, or Arthur mentioned, Section 18 and disposition versus what we're doing in the RAD, so we're clear about sort of the tools that we're using here?
Yes, so we would be utilizing Section 18 disposition tool here. We've actually had a kickoff call with our strategy consultant this week, so we're going to employ our strategy consultant to actually help us prepare those Section 18 applications, starting with the first batch of vacant sites that you all approved, I believe, at the last board's meeting. And so we'll come out of that process with those consultants. As they're going to, we're going to break the applications into three batches. They're going to assist us with each three of those applications. And then hopefully at the end of that, we'll have almost like a step-by-step so that we can do it ourselves moving forward, should we need to. And so we also have them, part of their analysis is helping us understand whether it makes sense to at all introduce a Section 32 tool as well, just for home ownership. And so we are, again, we had our first kickoff call today, but we should have a clear set of next steps.
If it's okay for me to add, I think just to make sure that you and the whole audience understands, so what this you're alluding to is a way to make sure that the rental assistance that supports each individual family in their unit without sort of operating subsidy is captured and not lost, right? And so the Section 18 process would allow that rental assistance to be turned into higher value rental assistance demonstration or RAD rental assistance, and then it would go back into our portfolio for use in and potentially either project-based Section 8 work that Felicia's team leads, or maybe part of one of the redevelopment efforts. But that rental assistance will be retained. One other important aspect to highlight here about the rental assistance is there will probably be a few cases where people who are living in occupying single-family scattered site units might say, you know, I'm not ready to participate in a home ownership program, but I would like to. I'd like to stay and continue to receive the subsidy. We'll also have the ability to relocate them if they like to another DHC unit. And there's also something called a tenant protection voucher, which they are also eligible for if they elect. So they'll have a range of choices, including owning their house in each case that we're talking about an occupied unit. But the rental assistance will be retained in our portfolio and available to be used for future development.
All right, so I'm just going to say it back, and there's a much more like this understanding. So Section 18, we're functionally declaring to HUD that as a public housing asset, we're going to dispose of this, because I think it's really like functional obsolescence, yeah, Whatever the language is. It's very difficult to manage and are very expensive on the scattered site side. But we don't lose the public housing resource in the form of rental assistance, which is really important. And so what many housing authorities across the country have done with these scattered sites have done this. Section 18, we're taking it out of the public housing program to move it to home ownership, retain the rental assistance, and then we can protect the tenants in the three ways that you mentioned. Either they can enter the home ownership program, which is a different set of resources that we have a program against it, or we can take that rental assistance that was project-based at the time because it was a public housing asset, and functionally pull it back into the pool and then move that tenant to another site and reallocate, or they can get the protection voucher, which gives them all their viability. So, you know, I think this is, for scattered site, my preferred path on these, because I think it allows us to protect the residents housing assistance, but gives them some agency, and we can have become liabilities on most public housing balance sheets because they're just very expensive to maintain and give people some options on what they want to do.
And so the plan would be to have someone either go into the housing ownership program or at least get a voucher.
Yes, each person who's in one of the units, they will have a choice. They can say, I'd like to buy this house, I want to work with a program that you've developed to buy this house. I'd like to move to another DHC site, or I'd like a tenant protection voucher protecting units in the entire market area. Okay. And as Aaron was saying, it gives them a lot of agency, and we're bringing all, I think, of our resources frankly to their door, so they've got a choice, while also retaining our rental assistance. So just one other point would be that retained rental assistance could allow us to add new public housing somewhere else in our portfolio. So as we look at some of our redevelopment sites, like let's talk about Diggs and Forest Park, which we're hoping to achieve Choice Neighborhoods grant for, I'd be able to bring new rental assistance
to those.
Every one of the 150 or so rental assistance benefits might be able to help us build more affordable housing at that site.
And better.
Yes.
Okay, I think important to just explain as we're doing these developments, we're using different kinds of tools, and so what we're giving up and what we are retaining, and try to give people as much agency as possible. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay, let's vote on resolution 3317. All in favor?
Aye.
Is it 17? Sorry, I moved on. My bad. 316.
My bad.
Okay, I think motion passes. Great. Okay, moving on. Approval to renew DHC's commercial general liability insurance policy, resolution 3317.
Thank you. So for this item, I think we're going to be hearing from our general counsel, who is coming to us via the use of Zoom here. We also have the benefit of assistant counsel Anjani Smiley in the event that we're unable to raise Ms. Solanovic on Zoom. Kirsten, are you there?
I am.
Great.
Well, and good morning to everybody. So here before the board, I have a resolution for approval to renew DHC's commercial general liability insurance policy with the Housing Authority Risk Retention Group. Because HUD has issued a procurement waiver for housing authorities to obtain insurance directly from HARB, we do not need to have to go out to solicit bids. As a result, we requested a quote from HARB, as we've had insurance with them for several years now, in order to renew this policy. Within the board letter, you'll see the breakdown of the coverage amounts, the deductible, and the premium amounts for each component of these insurance liability, for each of these liability insurance pieces. The total premium is $295,097. This quoted premium is for our commercial general liability, and it is a 9.6% increase from last year's premium. On average, most insurance renewals are seeing increases in the 20% range, which makes this a very beneficial and advantageous policy renewal for DHC. Additionally, it aligns directly with the insurance increases in previous years, which is a great thing for us right now, particularly when considering inflation. The reason behind having these policies are not only to protect the DHC assets, but also because it is a requirement under our ACC contract with HUD. Finally, I also want to note that this policy in particular provides us the possibility for dividends at the end of each policy year, and I'm pleased to report that we are anticipating a total amount of approximately $152,388.28 in dividends to be paid out upon our policy renewal in August in order to help defray the cost of these new policies. And I'm happy to answer any questions from the board.
Thank you, Kirsten. Let's get a motion on resolution 3317. I'm going to do moved and seconded.
Okay.
Moved by Commissioner Williams, seconded by Commissioner Renscher. Questions?
One quick question. Just knowing and understanding that you did not go through the procurement process, but what is the comfort that you have, believing this is the cheapest insurance pathway? Was there any comparison to other opportunities to work with any other company?
We did not look for any comparison with any other company because HARB traditionally has always had the best rates. I did seek counsel from one of our outside counsels to get an understanding if this was a competitive rate, and he said very much so, given the fact that most insurance policies are going up upwards of 20% these days because of inflation. So in as much as we did not get additional quotes from other companies because we did not go through the bid process, I do know that this is a competitive price and a very advantageous price for DHC. And in fact, the original quote was almost 10% and we negotiated it down to 9.6.
Could I ask a point of clarification, Kirsten?
Yeah.
Housing Authority insurance is a relatively narrow field. Are there many other organizations that offer this insurance? And also, do they all offer dividends?
Thank you for the clarification question, Arthur. No, there are not a lot of companies out there that are willing to insure housing authorities out there at all. And so this particular company has been a part of the insurance risk pool, which is why HUD has issued this bid waiver, because they already know it is the not only best suited company to provide this type of insurance, but also the best situated in order to give us the most competitive pricing.
I think I have seen Hartford and AIG in this space, but they're, well, Hartford may be a mutual, but the big difference is it's a mutual we own, and we were in early, as I recall, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, our share is high. So that 9.6 is also, that's gross, gross the dividend, right? Not net the dividend, which is like, why, you know, it's not making sense for us to do this. But Kirsten, my biggest question for you was, on these policy limit numbers, you know, I'm a little concerned they look light to me, but what's your comfort level on where we're at the coverage amounts? Deductibles seem fine. The coverage levels, you know, did you do a review of that when you were bidding the policy, or did we just roll forward the last policy?
We did take a look at the coverage amounts. And given the, actually, I'm pleased to announce that we will be receiving a low loss award from HARG and the HAI group as a result of our low, the small amount of claims that we've submitted.
Which is wild.
Yes. Because we've only submitted, a total of 2 claims in the last year specifically for this. And they were so low in dollar amount that we didn't feel the need to move those dollar amounts anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this an annual renewal?
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, at some point, even if we're not going to take the policy to bid, I do think it would be wise to maybe get a broker to look at these coverage amounts, just to make sure, right, that we're sort of, inflationary costs are thing I'm obviously concerned about. So, if we're in line with sort of last year's loss numbers is probably fine, but you know, every 2 to 3 years, just at least having a broker look at the coverages is probably worth the time.
Yep, and I will say next month before this board, I will be presenting an item regarding outside legal services. And under one of those categories that we went out to bid for outside legal services is insurance coverage. So we have some counsel, hopefully, that will be able to advise us, similar to the capacity of a broker, in terms of what this coverage, you know, if we should be moving our coverages up and down depending on our loss runs.
Okay.
But we'll look into a broker as well.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Swim stuff out, but we can still take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. Onward. Yes, on to our informational items. I think Mr. Jemison, doing vehicle purchases.
I'm introducing the person with.
All right.
Thank you, members of the board. We've got a couple of informational items today. First one is vehicle purchases. Kaleem will be providing that information.
Good morning again, everyone. Kaleem Muhammad, just giving an informational update on vehicle purchases. We looked at our current inventory and we saw there was a need for the staff to get some updated vehicles, mostly for the maintenance team. We're purchasing those through some of our capital funding through a force account we would allow through HUD, as well as our operational for resident services that look under need. So we're looking for a total of 5 vehicles currently. We're in the midst of getting those purchased, two of them this week, and three others forthcoming. So I just wanted to keep you all in the loop and the progress with that.
And maybe within through the chair, and maybe not August, but definitely the September meeting, we want to come and look at it portfolio-wide. We've taken a good look working with our procurement team, Colleen and Amanda, Susan, who have done a phenomenal job of bringing us to where we are today and soliciting bids and getting good quotes with and building partnerships. But working with Tiffany and Edric Matthews is our supervisor of the maintenance techs, and of course our capital genius here, Mr. Mike Edwards. We're trying to look at portfolio-wide and look at contracts and doing make versus buy, especially this last winter we had, we were really 100% relying on contractors to put salt and snow removal, especially on our parking lots. And so with cost-benefit analysis, we're also looking at procuring a couple trucks, and we know salt may eat them up in 4 or 5 years, but we would have bought them twice if we continue on the path of using contractors. So we're taking those evaluations, so more to come. These were just to fill an immediate need as we're changing, doing work orders, making sure the team can put drywall, big equipment, a stove, refrigerator, and a utility vehicle. Making sure that Denise and her team with deliveries, because her partnerships have grown with materials and goods for home and furniture. And this is really nice quality things that they don't have to go rent a truck, they can do it on their own. So just leveraging funding from different sources, doing the analysis, working closely with the finance team to make this happen. So coming forth, there will be a request for additional vehicles, and the that part of it should be a reduction in contract costs. So it should wait, so.
Great, I'd like to ask this. Are we gonna look at, so are these mostly pickups for maintenance?
Maintenance need a combination of both. Pickups will just be needed for at least a couple just to help drop saw, so we don't have to pay $7,000, right? Drop saw when it don't have big snow removals in our parking lot, so we don't have to call for use. But most of these are utility trucks to put in equipment and supplies so that they don't have to keep going back and forth, because we're building, working on, we're going to hire a special project manager to help us build out an inventory so we can buy through the procurement process, and I think they went over with Commissioner Holsey. We can buy stuff in bulk, utilizing contracts. And Michael's a really good negotiator too. He's I don't know who's backing and Robin, I don't know between the two, but he's really good at that. So we can buy in bulk so that the team can work more efficiently as they go through the portfolio of our, you know, over 2,000 units that we have.
I only mentioned that really asked if I drive one, but I am aware of a municipality that just did all of their parks department and makes facilities to all electric vehicles, Lightnings in particular, for Lightnings. It's a very cheap time to buy an electric truck, and the operations and maintenance on them is nothing. You do nothing. There's no oil changes. There's no, it is. Yeah. So, and they will install the chargers for you for free. It's a very good time to buy electric.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, so I'd like, you know, we reduce our carbon footprint to have lower operations costs, and you're highly incentivized to do so. So I encourage you to get a bid.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Yep, but the ones we're in the process with now are just the transit cargo vans. The pickups are next, so keep that in mind and look at it.
We just had an immediate need. The floors will rot now.
Sure.
We just had an immediate need, and we just went out and had to make a move relatively quickly because we're moving.
Okay, all right. So that was the first informational. Second one is important, I think, this month in particular for us to be introducing, talking about the performance last year and talking about goals. And so Irene has been operating a process with each of our leads to sort of develop some goals. So you can hear about that today. Irene?
Sure. Okay, through the chair again. So working with a wonderful and very resilient and loyal team members, our directors, building out corporate hygiene in 2023, you know, working with Emily, Rabe, Sheree, Denise, Felicia, and everybody else, a host of everyone else. We're trying to show now outcomes of these operational goals. So we knew where we were at delinquencies, all the operational challenges that we have. Mr. Renter was a great mentor to me in explaining, you know, nobody cares about that. Let's talk, you know, we know you're gonna fix that. Let's go to the outcomes. And it was more development, so I would definitely, you know, under the leadership of Tyler with development and her team, Greg. But what's key is, if you look at page number 30, this is how BHC Footprint is tracking in affordable housing. And again, the font, that they're too small, we'll work with Tamla to kind of help her do landscape versus portrait and maybe a little bit bigger for the team to see. And she see me looking at her. But on page number 30, you see four tremendous outcomes of what we're doing every day. So the first one is relevant. It's really affordable housing opportunities. It's really our operational goals that we work on. Are we, can you see that?
Page 29.
It's page 29.
Yeah, page 29. Mm-hmm. Are you
looking at
the chart?
Got it, yep.
So it's, okay. Yeah, you got it. You were saying page, no, I will go to the next page. Yeah, we're talking about, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, the goals, yeah. I'm like, okay. You got it? Okay, I'm gonna make sure you got it. Thank you. So this is where we're tracking at. So the first one is dealing with affordable housing. And again, we're trying to look at our footprint in affordable housing as we move toward amazing, and that's a word that the board has referenced the DHC team here. They want us to be amazing, right, Arthur?
Yeah.
So when we look at number one, we want to look at the total number of families housed. And right now, that's not just with under the low-income public housing, but it's also the vouchers. Not just Felicia's vouchers, tenant-based vouchers, but also the project-based vouchers that is utilized. And not just the eight vouchers that maybe is on the deal, but maybe exactly. Those eight vouchers maybe housing 60 families. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to track that with our performance lead performance officer who is now gathering all that information, because again, we had to do the corporate hygiene and data addition and bringing it all in, and she's done a wonderful job of getting us here, Emily O'Reilly. And then we also want to talk about the goals of what Michael Investment and Capital and what Edric and Tiffany Investment in Real Estate Management. How much money are we putting in, take the salaries out, to the actual properties to increase the resident experience? And so there has been a lot of work done across the portfolio. Some people walk in and say, well, I can't really tell. Well, you don't see what you used to see, you know, right? You see units getting turned. You see, you know, more maintenance on the facade, and you see entryways. You see concrete being laid. More work to be done. It's not perfect because we're dealing with limited funds, but you see more being strategically placed back into these properties for a better resident experience. When we move on to number two, talking about building generational growth, this is the family self-sufficiency program. You buy your home, you're walking into that home with equity because you have people like Rocket, you have Huntington Bank that's also helping with the down payment. So if you bought a house for $100,000 and you got your own equity, escrow that you saved that you may use to furnish or put down on the house, and then you get $25,000 or other money, you're walking in with equity. And it helps the payment be low, helps you to move forward. You can leave it to your children, grandchildren, rent it out as you move on into, you know, into other journeys in your life. So those goals right now, we want 1,000 participants. And we're looking at this over the next 5 years, right? We feel we're going to get more because Denise has now full throttle team, and they're out at different events. They're bringing more people in. There's more outreach, but more to come. We also looking at home ownerships, and I think with the development work at the scatter sites that Tyler and Greg has been working on, we can see more families getting to there. I think to date we got five?
Six as of last week. Okay. Six homeowners, four under contract, and five now shopping. So it's consistently growing.
It's consistent. We only did one last year. We knew we needed a standard operating procedure because it was like having a baby, because it touched so many different departments inside and outside.
Yeah.
So we invested in that. That was one of the number one goals. And people are like, why is this the number one goal? Because we want people to be able to have generational wealth and see and grow. And so we're looking at about $3 million in home ownership equity over the next 5 years. And what that means, you know, we averaging around 25, 30,000 for each. So you take that times 100,000, that's what 3 million. 30, you know, 30 walking in one home equity. And it can be more in some instances, you know.
We're at 92,000 right now, with the 6 homes.
And again, you have to walk before you run. That's why we did one last year. Now we're doing SOPs. We're probably going to get to a really healthy number this year.
Yeah.
If we can use that as a grant to really get this right, then a couple of years from now, we can get that number to where it needs to go.
I think you said that really low. Can you say that again?
What
does that 92 represent and what page are you
referencing?
In your report is how many people that passed
six the people. Office? 6 people have purchased homes. Of the 6 people, they have a total of 91,650 in home equity.
Meaning that the value of the home,
the down payments that they put down themselves, one was 40,000, one was 20-something thousand, 17,000. That's equity in their home.
That's just out of 6 people. So
exactly.
Just imagine what's going to happen.
Exactly.
So if we move to point number 3, reshaping sustainable, affordable housing, this is where Tyler and her team is coming in. We are looking at to have over $1 billion in the next 5 years. I think we're gonna reach that like really before then. And because we got Parkside, over 200 million. Gardenview Estates, Brewster's coming down, Sheridan's coming down the pipeline. So just impacting individuals and this humble board, and I think it was you, Commissioner Aaron, that says, what about the residents in Detroit that have under 30% AMI? I want at least 200. And so this is increasing that footprint as well. And then finally on number 4, and it's not final, it's the number 1. Without partnership support, we wouldn't be able to have these conversations we're having now. We wouldn't see the growth that we're having now. Denise, you say $10 million in the next 5 years. I think that's a really no number, but we wanted to start out just so that everybody would know. This is dollars that we're also getting from people who are helping Rocket, Huntington Bank, but it's also other significant donors who donate services, Wayne State University at your
Common
events.
United Healthcare, Forgotten Harvest, Gleaners, we have a myriad of.
Rescue, Food Mission, it's just.
Yeah, Detroit Rescue Mission. Donated all the food for our entire summer event. So from June to October, they're supplying the food for each event, which is twice a week.
Talk about the food that's donated.
The food that was done, oh my goodness. So they've done 3 events so far. The first one we had smothered chicken, baked chicken, barbecue chicken, mashed potatoes and gravy, peas, dinner rolls. I mean a full encore dinner. And it's been that way. Even at an event for Digital C, we had asparagus, okay? Asparagus is pretty expensive. So that was really great that they have donated all of this food. So we have events on Wednesdays and Fridays every week from now, or from beginning of June to the end of October, and they will be donating the food.
And you passed out calendars to the board. Maybe
yes.
We can get feedback on how the board will like these events. It's on a piece of paper, but it may not be a calendar notice, and it may slip by.
I can definitely send out a calendar notice. It'd be wonderful for you guys to come out and see what we do. Our events are really big. We have partners that come out from Wayne State Medical School. They come out. We have an NP, that nurse practitioner, that's there doing.
But talk about the furniture too. It's just a lot.
It's a lot. I can take up all the time, but it's a lot. So we have furniture coming. We have a donor partner, Hearts of Humanity, and they give us brand new clothing, household accessories, rugs, lamps, furniture, bedroom furniture from Ralph Lauren, brand new furniture from IKEA and I can't think of the other.
So we've housed.
It's a lot. It's just a lot.
We've housed since 2024.
And they've given us more than, at this point, from 22 to now, they've given us items in the number of like $4 million value.
Mm-hmm. So with that, the connection is we've housed over 438 individuals since January 2024.
Yes.
There's approximately 50% of that is homeless individuals. Those homeless individuals have benefit in part through the donation.
Food, clothing, and furniture. A bed, mattress frame, dinette set, a chair or sofa, something they can sit in their living room, as well as something to sit at the table and eat and in a bed to sleep in.
So we want to capture this footprint and present it definitely to this board, get your feedback on what you would like to see or track. We're hopeful to have some type of KPIs generated next month in this board packet to show the impact of your leadership to us and how we're making a change in the lives of affordable housing.
That's absolutely. So we again, informationally, we want to make sure you saw this, you see our normal KPIs that are being shared to support. So impact KPIs that we want to know impact pattern.
And you know, since we're here, Arthur, you know, just kind of talking about our, now that that's on page 29 for you, Donald. This is the first, I think in this last quarter, it's the first time where DHC, since that I can see, and we just started tracking in 2024, where our end of participations are now less than net than what we're bringing in from admitted, you know, new families into the program. So this is a great turning point. You know, before we, you know, we were doing a lot of work working under the leadership of our compliance officer, Ray Leslie, and our partner, Continental Management, Jackie. We were moving people, the wait list, all these great things. In June of last year, working with the city of Detroit, we brought 31 people in, but as we were bringing people in, we were cleaning up with the research, you know, and people were ending participation. Now we're at a plateau where now our admissions are higher than our end of participation. And so I'm very, very pleased with that because it shows us that we're turning a point. And it, you know, I'll let Felicia, when we get more ready.
Team 100.
Team 100 is DHC, but you know there is a Team 100.67. So, you know. And I think when we have our offsite with the board and we talk about risks and opportunities and what KPIs we need to track, and that should be around September, October, based upon when the board wants to do that, I think more KPIs may come out of that, or different KPIs based upon the risk appetite of the board.
So I'm going to ask a quick question. So I didn't see the amount of units that need to be rehabbed to occupy. Where is that, or do you have that number?
I do. So the number of units that have not been taken offline, so we have there's three pools. There's units that's been taken offline because, and they're under HUD approved, and they do not account against us for three reasons. One, they're under contract. We're reviewing Booster, for example, for the environmental, and the results are coming out really good. We're following up on that. Parkside is going through a redevelopment, so we are, because we have a CHAP or communication of a housing assistance plan that's been approved by HUD, we can take those units offline. We also have units with four categories taken offline because they're going to be utilized by resident councils as well as resident services. And then the fourth is this gentleman here who presented a contract in January. He's turning units, so he has a contract in place that we took them offline, and to date, I think he put back like 50 units. Okay, so the other bucket, and so that number's, the other bucket is about 500 units that are constantly being turned. People are in and out, and they're being turned by our partners, Continental, and our RUM individuals who's turning units. So the total is around 900 units in total. And so that's why our number is 85% occupied.
Yeah. And so, like, the amount of units, like, minus the park side, minus, like, I'm just thinking, like, units mm-hmm. need updated mm-hmm. to be occupied.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we can distinguish between.
We can. We got 400 in HUD approved status, and okay. It's 50-50. It's 414 as of, I would say, 7-1. And then we have another like 459 that we're turning across, not just DHC owned, but also it's our mixed finance too.
Right.
Mixed finance is a low number, it's less than 100. We have the biggest number, and we're turning them. And so that's why our vacancy is at 85%. So we have roughly a little over 800 units.
You mentioned Continental. Mm-hmm. There. Redeveloping other apartments?
It's just, if it's a small, if they got to go in and do some small work, they'll do it. And because we got to look at our operating dollars versus capital.
What do you mean when you say continental operating?
Okay, all I'm saying is when they move out, so we make a designation of, is it going to use capital be headed by Michael? Or is it something small enough, you know, they just got to go in and clean the apartment, maybe change out the floor, maybe something really basic. And it's using normal operating dollars, and Continental will do that. He has run across the portfolio. He's worked closely with Continental. You could talk. I don't have to talk for you, sir. and that was the contract that you guys approved in January to do up to 150, utilizing $3 million of capital dollars. So you
want
to talk about that?
Yeah.
Sheridan, for example.
Yeah, we're at Sheridan one right now. We are in the process of, there's a couple of projects going on as we're doing the modernization of these units. But we're proud to say, you know, there's some challenges, but it's not costing us more money. It's just the deliverables of how many units we were doing at the State Fair was a positive experience, but because of the infrastructure at the Sheridan, it slowed us down because, you know, just in order to do change a valve, you have to basically shut off the water to the entire building. So, not anticipating that, we've actually moved around it. We've actually, you know, worked with the residents, worked with the building management company, and we're getting through it. So, we literally had a meeting yesterday to get some bottlenecks out of the way in terms of management, product delivery, and everything else, because we are limited to the amount of space that we have also to do this work. But positively, we're going to be getting more units now after this meeting yesterday, and we're looking forward to getting over to Sheridan too. We're also looking to get another crew started at the Harriet Tubman so we can actually have two projects going at the same time. And when I came to the board, there was a growing pain. We had to understand what needed to be done, but we are moving forward and looking forward to getting more units. Not only exceeding the 150, but you know, as we're understanding more efficiencies, we're actually adding more units to the projects that are going on. So when we come back at the finished product, not only that, again, we're looking at staying on budget, but we're looking at adding more units than the ones we promised you in the first place.
Right.
Maybe if I could just real quickly hitting our follow-up items on page 32.
Yes.
Maybe the status update on the what you want to say on the spring cleaning.
So the spring cleaning was asked by a resident, and again through our physical needs assessment that was headed by our capital manager here, and also our room director who took a look at from the inspection groups as well. Facade work needs to be done, and so we're focusing more on that first, just to leverage our resources. And so this is still it's on hold, really. The second one dealing with the report to the board about outstanding rents at Parkside Process through the rent eviction project that we're doing for AR. A lot of things have came to light, and we're working closely with Continental. Change management has happened there, and they're in the process of hiring a new property manager. In addition, the residents there who had concerns in regards to their receivables, deeper dives have been taken, and that's still in process. But at the end of the day, all residents will be, you know, any adjustments that need to be made or clarification or of understanding, that's still in process, and we're continuously doing that. But we're hopeful that can be all settled by definitely mid-August. The new property manager should be starting by the end of this month. We have the vice president going out working, doing recertifications. We have regional managers right now in the interim, and then they're working closely with our compliance officers. So that is definitely in process, and we've asked for individuals to definitely be patient with us, because it's just been a lot of changes going on. And that's across the portfolio, you know, ins and outs of management, because our bar is higher than it used to be, right? Internally and externally. And so we're just weathering the storm, but at the end of the day, the residents will be made whole. Our team members internally here, we've gone through some things, but the issue is now for many individuals is they might need an interim recertification, right? So they may have stopped work 6 months ago or a year ago, and they just need to have their income re-verified and updated.
Sojo doors?
Sojo doors, we said that once these were implemented that we would do an efficiency. You can just give a status of the doors.
Yeah, the doors are almost all in, and we're going to start on that project. We're having a kickoff meeting. We'll get with the project managers, and we will have a time frame of how we are going to do it. We actually did a test run about a week and a half ago with one of the doors, and the contractor came back saying that seems like it's going to be good, and we're going to get started on that really soon.
I think we can take the AR initiative off the list, right?
So we just did the update.
Yep, just did the update. Approve that. Okay. What else do we want to do for departmental updates?
So I did want to do Felicia for the departmental updates, but I think unless people have urgent items, other than that, we'll move to Felicia.
Good afternoon, board. Good morning. Good morning, on the board. Our viewing board audience. For the sake of time, I'm not going to belabor, but I do want to just make a few key points because I do think that the HCB program right now is in a place where we want to celebrate our wins. And just to give you a little hindsight, at one point at our lowest, over 5,100 voucher holders, our program was more than half delinquent in annual recertifications and rent increases and contract executions and moves. And just about every process you can name, we were severely delinquent in. We were not meeting the metrics that HUD has in place for our program. And it was very critical. And to come to today where we have met and in most cases exceeded some, met some guidelines for HUD. We're in a very good place. We are more than over 100% with our annual recertification. We are operating within our administrative plans and timelines on all processes across the board. So just to say that it took a long time, a lot of hard work, but we couldn't have did it without, you know, the backing of our team and our leadership and the board, because what was critical was staffing. We could not get staff, we couldn't retain staff. And you all gave us, you know, the approval to get our rates where they would be competitive. And that was the game changer. So now it's continuing to stabilize the program. We service 5 counties, not just the city of Detroit. Continue to stabilize the program, increase professional development, because our program touches a lot of different areas. When we talk about home ownership, some of our home ownership, a lot of our HCB people have been successful with partnering with Denise's team. And, you know, we do the administrative part on that. We touch FSS. We touch some of the new, you know, in the future, there may be some RAD and project-based. So just making sure that my team is strong so that we can handle all the different tentacles and the things we touch under our program. But again, I just wanted to say thank you, because we could not have done it without the support and backing of our board and leadership team and co-workers and departments and everybody that came together to help us get to where we are.
Charlotte.
Definitely, sure. Everybody. It was a team effort.
All right. So,
can Shara give us a little update about Digital C and what that meant to him and what he has been trying to do for the residents here and in partnership with the city of Detroit? What just happened? Like Rocket Wednesday near it?
Yeah, getting to start, it's a long story, but just to keep it short. We partnered the City of Detroit. City of Detroit got some funding and some different partner, Merit, Digital C, And with that collaboration, we're able to provide free wireless broadband internet service to some of the DAC communities, about 450 residents, and it's good for 3 years. So I'm hoping that that, and it's a very decent bandwidth. It's a 500 meg down and then up for household. So we're hoping, you know, this will give at least a resident an opportunity to get into better training programs. The DAC team is running a lot of training programs that they, now they have access in their home. They can use that. They can use it for the some of telehealth services. They can use for any job searching. So hopefully that will help them to improve overall their lifestyle.
When did you start trying to do this? I know when I came in, he was running in with a presentation and you know, working with Art Thomas at the city. So when did you start?
The initiative was actually in 2008. The time when the HERD actually set the benchmark for what is broadband. Before that, it was not. People were selling and dial-up services, keeping saying it's a broadband. At that time, they actually came up with this minimum, this is the requirement for the broadband. So we started during that time, we presented during the recovery funding. That time, it was not really going anywhere. Then when the ARPA funding came, we submitted to the city. That time, it was actually, we obligated, you know, we got some information that the money is available, but then whatever is happening with the ARPA funds, so it was just put on back burner. But luckily, the city came back and they found money, at least for this. And I'm hoping
Rocket made close deal. Yeah.
We're hoping, you know, we will be able to get some of other. The goal is to get all DAC residents, at least on the public housing side. Actually, in the ARPA fund, we also put all the HCV residents. We had a free service available for them too. But at some point, we'll see if you get it to everybody in the city.
So right now it's just Diggs, Brewster, and Parkside as a pilot.
No, no, Parkside.
I'm not, Forest Park. Forest Park is the other F. Yeah, Forest Park. FP. Yeah.
Yes. So that's a dream for, at least for me,
right,
to have this for our residents. So
it's digital inclusion.
Yes.
It's a major priority for us.
Excellent.
So, I think what we're going to do, unless there are other informational items that people want to share from their departmental monthly reports.
Security?
All right, well then, I did want to have I would like to share one other item, an update, in the form of an update before we go to general public comments. So, as I think many of you will remember, at the last board meeting, there were members of the resident council and their advisors, as well as members of the Friends of Parkside, who presented to the board indicating their concerns about ongoing use of common facilities out at Parkside for different programming use. We had a robust discussion about it here. I was directed by the board to come up with a solution that would allow both Friends of Parkside and resident council to occupy the space that we have in the community building out there at Parkside. So we had, just to make sure everybody knows what we did since then, we conducted a listening session. We let both parties submit their information about their proposals about how the space should be used. We listened, and then we responded to both of them with proposals for use of the space. They, to my knowledge, they both received those proposals, and both groups are currently, at the last report, speaking with their internal groups to figure out what direction they'd like to take, whether they want to accept the proposal or what other responses they'd like to provide to our proposals. I know that there's board meetings of both. There was a board meeting this past week of the resident council, and I also know there's been meetings of the board planned for next week for Friends of Parkside. I should add one other important detail. It was noted by members of the board that resident council, because it's part of a HUD obligation, needs to be given primacy in making sure they have space. And so what we have done with the help of our resident services team is made available an interim space to resident council immediately, so they have a space to meet and do some of the things that they are planning to do until there's a resolution to this matter. But again, as we move on into questions, I want to make sure that I give you guys an update on what's happened there. I do fear that both groups did not get what they want exactly, but I do think a compromise has been proposed that we hope will work for both. At any rate, I just wanted to make sure as the end of our departmental monthly reports that we provided that background, and so we can go on to the next items if you care to, Commissioner Seibert.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions before we go to public comment?
I actually have two quick ones, not to necessarily be answered for today. Just wondering, you know, based on pending HUD rules and regulations that the federal government we're looking at now, how is that going to impact, you know, the city of Detroit and the Detroit Housing Commission, and what, if anything, that we need to do at this time to prepare for some of those things? There's a bunch of things that I heard that are changing about vouchers and the time people will be able to stay on their voucher. And then I was trying to reconcile the delinquencies that I saw for each public housing project with the write-offs, and I'm wondering if it's like a certain property management issue, or is it like a building specific issue where you're seeing most of the people who are delinquent?
So I would just say that there is and was significant opportunities for improvement, okay? And we are working hard toward bringing the standards up, and we, under the supervision of our real estate management deputy, we are having, and our compliance officer, and meetings I'm having, we're having weekly meetings in some shape or form to talk about how we can come together collaboratively, if it's attorney units, if it's leasing, what's going on with the resource. And so there's a lot of attention now hitting all at once versus you're just fixing one piece of it and then the rest go bad, then you got to catch up. We're hammering all collectively together and trying to do it efficiently. So to be politically correct, yes, there was problems. Yes, there still is problems. Some are internal, some are external, working. But we're focusing on our internal problems. The AR eviction project team, which is, you know, making sure individuals understand that there's a path other than getting evicted, that you can sign a tenant payment agreement, making sure that your paperwork, your current situation is updated, maybe going to debt counseling, and then also going to maybe a housekeeping class. That was the feedback that was given. And then we have proper sign-off, and maybe it can be some choices to help them going forward and moving forward. And so those are some of the external. We're also working with capital and some of the, you know, working with capital funds to kind of fix things that need to be fixed and have a constant maintenance going on with the funding that comes from the CFP program, the 25% that we get on the maintenance. So I think it was a montage of a lot of different things that had occurred over years, and now we're trying to catch up and at the same time do everything all at once. So the answer is yes. There's a lot of external issues and internal. We came a long way internally, and that's what our partners, but there's still a lot of room for growth. Can I say that really well?
Okay. So, on the other comment.
He said okay, so, yes.
I'm good. That's very good. I think that's great.
The Irene and me wanted to, trying to be cognizant, because there's a lot of hardworking people, and I would be remiss to say that. We have Edric, we have Mr. Sean, we have a lot of great people who've been, Mr. Joe, doing a lot of great things. Jeremy, when I call the closer, But they're doing great, but then if I'm missing on this end, then it all fails, right? And so what we're trying to do is get, first of all, everybody what they need to succeed, supplies, making sure they got good partners and vendors to do what they need so that we can come together and work all together and step together versus they stepping over here, leasing up, but then we're not doing what other things that need to be doable. Also, we have, unfortunately, maybe residents who, you know, may need to really be enforced about their behaviors. And so maybe decreasing others' residents' experience. So mm-hmm. we're trying to pull all that in one line and we move together. And I think before it was this, and no impact. We're trying to make a greater impact by taking all these different facets that cause us to not perform well, to cause the resident to not have a good resident experience, and work collaboratively together along with development so that we can move the needle. And we saw a lot of that. That's the ACB, right? You saw that momentum with ACB. Did that answer your question, sir? A little?
So just to follow up on the other half, which was, I think Commissioner Seibert asked about what is going to happen to people whose SNAP benefits are going to change. And they'll have less access to food, and the way that affects their bottom line. And since we will get every tenant's bottom line through recertification, we have any flexibility in this way. So I actually reached out to some former policy colleagues about this, and there is some research that they're sending me about what the kind of rough estimate would be. Now, it's not something that we can take into consideration now, but unfortunately, programs like Meetup and EatUp and others that provide food for folks in the summer, and school lunches that provide food for people during the week are going to be impacted by these cuts. They could be, depending on what state's abilities to pay are, they could be relatively severe. Because basically, they say, we'll keep running the program, but you have to pay, instead of paying for 30% of it, you might have to pay for 70% of it. And I think that's where the impact's going to be felt. We do have a little planning time, because I think that goes into effect at the end of next year, but it's a very big concern, and I should have some research about what its impacts will be soon.
Can I say something to that too? So hearing that from the board last month, we made some initiative steps, and so we've gotten more sites, senior sites under the Forgotten Harvest deliveries. But significant, we had one of the partners that was at Brewster last Friday was Keep Growing Detroit, and they are going to be working with us to try to rebuild community gardens at our sites.
The only thing I might add to that, Donald, is the big beautiful bill reductions for now in appropriations budgeting season in D.C. So yeah, I'm just going to say this. We'll see if an appropriations bill actually gets done. Actually, the most likely outcome is that there's not political will and they'll do a continuing resolution and nothing will change. But I think it is also important to just say that at least what is proposed now will have a very material impact on our business.
Absolutely.
About a 25% cut in HUD staffing levels nationally, which will be a massive blow to capacity at HUD to help facilitate our work, but the proposed cuts to the rental assistance program, particularly Section 8, are very, very material and will hurt a city like Detroit really, like very dramatically. So, and could happen very quickly. So, you know, this gives me a tremendous amount of anxiety. I'm very scared about this personally. I don't think the political will is there right now to actually make that happen, but it is extremely important for DHC, for our residents, to make clear to our representatives how important the work of DHC is, how important public housing is as a resource in a city like Detroit. And we as an institution, I think at some point, are going to be forced to accelerate the change in our business model. We are gonna have to grapple with these cuts to rental assistance, I think at some point. So we are going to have to move faster than we might want to, because we are going to be potentially put in a position where we have to protect our residents in the best way that we can, which is not going to be and ideal way. So I just come for the leadership team, for the staff, for the folks who are online, you know, this is, it's just gonna be tough. It's gonna, we're gonna have a lot of headwinds. So I'm optimistic that cooler heads will prevail, even if there are changes that look a little smoother. But right now, what's on the table is very concerning. It's very concerning. So, you know, I know we get a lot of animosity towards the DHC, but you know, this is a time for solidarity to us that we, to the degree that we can happen.
So we have been very cognizant about watching and seeing where the trajectory is going to go with the changes that will, again, it will impact everyone in the affordable industry, but absolutely the HCB program. We're monitoring, we're working with partners externally, having conversations internally, so that, because like you said, it could, we don't know what to anticipate. So we have to start looking at what ifs. So we are having those discussions. We are having those talks with, well, I am having those conversations with community partners who also affect how our residents live holistically on our program. We work together on a lot of different areas. And right now, everyone is, you know, we're having think tanks. We're trying to figure out what will happen, worst case scenario, what it looks like. So those discussions are being had. They're being had industry-wide with NARO and other agencies. So it is a real concern. It is a real concern.
And so immediate, it comes down to cash and being able to pay landlords to keep individuals housed. So we have ceased and desist.
Yeah, there's no voucher issuance at this time. Right now we are, our protection is what we have on program right now, making sure that we can keep these families housed. So we're not able to issue new vouchers. We're, like most of the agencies, we're very in a very precarious finance position. So our main goal right now is keeping our current households and keeping them housed. Everything is increasing, rents are increasing.
And we're working closely, very closely
with our HUD team to make sure that we're monitoring our finances. Again, that we can maintain housing for our current voucher holders.
And we started this last year. So it's, you know,
right.
We started this all last year. We were given funding because of it. And we, when you hear, oh, they have 1,000, you know, vouchers, that those are empty coupons, to your point, because we're trying to weather the storm. Like you said, we may have to walk quickly. So we're trying to cut as much as we can and stop, you know, the bleeding.
I mean, that's the thing I like. It's the sort of Faustian choice that we have to make already on serving more people or having a rental subsidy that people can actually find quality housing. And that's a choice that we have to make now. That choice could be like really dramatically aggravated. And so there is no good answer, right? There is no good answer. So we have to make the best choice that we can, given the circumstances, and much of it beyond our control. So that's, we're already making those choices today. We don't have to make the dramatic one yet, but I'm trying to make sure the public understands that, like, this is not a, these are not good options. We're trying to make the least bad one. All right, well, I'm trying to keep us on agenda, so we have guests. I want to make sure that we're, anything else on the team? Okay. Let's do a general public comment. I'm sure I can get a recording.
This is the opportunity. This is the opportunity for public comment on matters unrelated to agenda action items. Comment is limited to 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for group representatives. To ensure speakers adhere to the time limits, the timekeeper will give a 1 minute warning for persons with a 3 minute comment period and a 2 minute warning for persons with a 5 minute comment period. This warning will be by means of a tone. When the speaker's time is up, the timekeeper will disconnect the call. If you are appearing at the meeting virtually, you will be able to sign up by calling the number specified on the DHC website and or by raising your hand and identifying yourself within the Zoom app during public comment. All other persons may sign up if they are able to appear in the room, provided there is sufficient space to accommodate those who care to make a physical appearance. A person representing a group must identify themselves and the group when calling. Please note that speakers may not pool their time nor yield time to another speaker. Persons who have called in to sign up to speak during the public comment period will be recognized first in the order in which they signed up, then all others who have raised hands. When your name is called, if you are in the room, please stand and state your name in a clear, audible tone. And if you are appearing by Zoom, when your name is called, please respond clearly and audibly after your microphone is unmuted. This is the opportunity for public comment on matters unrelated to agenda action items. Comment is limited to 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for group representative.
Okay. Warn twice. All right. Tim, do we have anyone signed up online? In the room first. Sorry, I was forgetting. So I saw Mr. Rowe. So you signed up?
Yes. Good morning, Commissioners and DHC staff, and congratulations to the new board member, Mr. Venture. My name is Zachary Rowe. I'm the executive director of the Friends of Parkside. We are a resident-led group founded in 1991 by residents for residents. I want to give a shout-out to the residents and FOP board members who joined today's meeting by Zoom. I also want to thank you, the commissioners, for listening at the June meeting to residents who shared how much Friends of Parkside meant to them. They felt heard and respected. And thank you as well, Mr. Jemison and his team. I'd like to thank Mr. Jemison and his team who met twice with us to discuss our future at Parkside and to share a draft agreement. Next week, our board, which includes a majority of Parkside residents, will meet to talk about the current situation and what it could mean for our work. While I understand the agreement cannot be discussed in detail right now, I do want to say that the process and possible changes could affect our ability to continue serving the community as we have for over 30 years. It also could impact our funding and partnerships. We will welcome the involvement of one or two commissioners to help guide the process and to ensure it reflects the board's goals and residents' voices. We hope the path forward builds on the spirit of the board's direction from the June meeting, but through a good faith effort to move forward together. Thank you for your time and for supporting the people of Parkside.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Ms. Sanders?
Good morning. My name is Kimberly Sanders. I'm operational manager for Friends of Parkside. I'm here today to tell you about what's been going on in the last month since the last time we met. It has been our pleasure to continue to work and do the work for our community. We have started our summer program. We, even though it was a late start, we still had 20 summer campers to sign up. They have started gardening. So to Denise's point, we're building a garden at the community with in tangent with our seniors and our summer campers. They're doing fall vegetables now. They've been doing learning tennis, tech. We have a computer lab, so they go to computer lab for an hour a day. We have meet up and eat up, so they're doing breakfast and lunch. So our summer program, even though it started a little late, we've been robust in making sure that our young people have something to do during the summertime and having fun by doing it. Also, we were able to have our health fair. We were, with everything that was going on with the space, we didn't know if we were going to do the health fair this year. We had an opportunity to continue the health fair. It was a success. Normally we reach over 500 people this year. Because we scaled back, it was still 300 with over 40 vendors. So that our community not only know that we're here to support them in any way, but also help with their health needs. our health and safety for your move forward to becoming a entrepreneur fair, because we did a after school program last year and we taught the kids about business. So two of our after school students were able to sell their products during the fair and both sold out. So it was a really great and exciting time for our community. Lastly, we had an opportunity to get our first round of Tech Goes Home computers. So when I was telling you the last time that our goal is to make sure that every family out at the Villages of Parkside had a computer, we had just the first round to come in. So if they came and did the classes, they were able to receive a computer, and now we're working on getting them services. So they'll get free service, internet service for a year. I think that covers, we're doing a lot. Sometimes with everything that's going on, it feels like Nehemiah. You're working and fighting at the same time, but we believe that the work is great and we're here for it. So I thank you for your time. I thank you for supporting the community.
Thank you, Ms. Sandy. Do we have anybody else in the room?
Our first speaker online is
Motorola Moto, you can come off of mute.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
All right, good morning. And my name is Robin Brookins. I live in the Villages of Parkside. And that I was my opinion last meeting you guys just had. And I only came, I told you before I didn't know anybody in the community, and I only started being a part of or engaging with the community as the redevelopment came about and they started calling so many meetings. And through the meetings, at my first meeting, I showed my concern. I spoke my concern about, you know, a resident council or whatever like that. And today, you know, it's a little bit frightening situation to be in on both sides a little bit, because I feel that the resident council is not listening to the residents. And being that I haven't lived here as long as a lot of people, I don't know many people. I have had personal conversations with a few residents here, and people are afraid to speak up for where they live, and that's a bad culture to live in. And so, you know, I feel like I need to speak up. And I just got a couple of points. Oh, I got my own time going real quick. So I got a couple of points that I made last time. And since last time till today, I've asked other resident council members, and they said they don't know what they do. They've been in office since January, and they're not providing any services to us. I also heard back early on that resident councils would need units or whatever. I'm not sure what that means, but we haven't even tried to understand what they need the space for. And I am here to advocate also for the Friends of Parkside, because resident council has been, last meeting I heard somebody continue to say, well, resident council is the standing voice for the residents. Well, if they're not listening to the residents and they're not having meetings with the residents and offering us, you know, a ear as to what residents want, they can't really speak on our behalf. And since January, there's been no meeting. There was a meeting scheduled for last Saturday. I attended and it was rescheduled, you know. So I don't understand why are they giving, I do understand why, because I understand the law, but I don't understand the way it's being ran, you know. It's a little bit sketchy. And with that, like, I feel like any good business is run at its best and it gets its best returns with the proper people and the proper, with the best people in position for the job that gets you your best return. And so, what am I gonna say? I'm sorry, I got so many things wrote down right here. I just wanna say, like, residents, and I guess I wanted to say some things about the redevelopment one time, I got 15 seconds. Residents kinda just don't wanna get lost in the redevelopment. We gotta kinda be able to trust our leadership. And if we can't trust our leadership, we can't, you know, say anything about all the changes that's being made. And there are discrepancies between what's being told and what's being showed. and I think that's my time. I have more, but that's my time, and I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, ma'am.
Our next caller is Miss Angela.
Miss Angela? You can come off of mute now. Miss Angela, please proceed. Miss Angela, if you're speaking, we cannot hear you, although it appears you're off mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Angela Pruitt. I am an advisor to the resident council. And it's disheartening to hear, I believe her name was Ms. Brookins, basically says she attempted to go to a meeting. And then hear Mr. Jamison, the executive director, say that there was a meeting held. Resident council sent the notice out for the meeting. A lot of residents showed up, but they were not given access to the community room, even though they had a confirmed date to meet. So they are trying to handle business, but they were not given access until the end of June, beginning of July, to any space. They do not have the resources that they need to operate as a resident council. They have tried in good faith to negotiate with the executive management team, and Denise has given some time, and Mr. Jamison, and they thought they had reached an agreement when they received two addendums to sign regarding their space. Once their resident council voted on it, the whole terms of the agreement were basically switched, and I'll read. It said, the new terms say, resident council shall not initiate or engage in any communications, whether verbal, written, or electronic, with any resident or occupant of villages of Parkside 2 or 4 without the express written permission of the TVP2 or DHC. Resident council is about advocating on behalf of residents. If they're being restricted or have to check in with DHC when they want to talk about grievances, debt collection, complaints, maintenance, repairs, all of that, that's not autonomy for a resident council in the spirit of HUD guidelines. I'm asking that the board, the actual board of DHC, take time to sit down and talk to the resident council to talk about whether or not in good faith the negotiations regarding them accessing space, accessing the meeting rooms for the purposes of serving the residents has been honored or done in good faith. Now, maybe you guys will agree that it was, or maybe you will agree that it was not, but I'm asking the board, as representing the group, as their advisor of resident council, so that residents don't get disheartened about their resident council that has not been able to operate. What you have are members that are about to expire in their position, and they haven't been even able to perform their duties. This is unfair to those ladies who came forward and were elected duly by the residents. This is unfair. The board needs to meet solely with the resident council and see how the good faith communications broke down and what's being asked of them that does not help the residents. And I think I'm a group, so I should get an extra 2 minutes on there to finish my conversation because I am the advisor for the resident council. So in continuing on my time, I'd like to say that if a resident doesn't see professionalism and they show up to a meeting and the doors are locked and they have to be turned away, if a resident council is given information to approve in less than 7 days and the property management is saying you have to give us more than 7 days notice and you're subject to other people using the rooms, when resident council under HUD's guidance should have first opportunity and residents to use space, community space, office space. So I'd like the board to take a look at what the resident council was offered originally that didn't have that language, that now has language that restricts the resident council from actually acting in the best interest of the residents at the villages of Parkside. And so with that said, the board, before any other meeting happens, needs to listen to the resident council and let them present proofs and evidence on how they tried in good faith to negotiate. And how those, every time something was agreed and voted on and took back or tried to be taken back, there's been an ongoing problem with the resident council getting access to office space or meeting space, or being interrupted while they're in the space. And that's all I have to say. Please meet with the DHC board.
Thank you, Angela. Please.
So, thank you, Ms. Pruitt, for your call in. And again, I appreciate your advocacy on behalf of the resident council and many of the things you said. There were a couple things in there that for the record, I'd like to make sure accurately represented. I was describing a meeting that happened, not the meeting you're describing, I think, unfortunately, accurately, where you did not get access to the space you intended. Talking about a board meeting that I was advised took place among members of the resident council. The second thing I'd want to mention to you is that we did, that Ms. Pruitt is speaking about an offer to manage and control the space that was made to the resident council before last month's board meeting. That offer was made, and it was made in good. Was made sincerely and in good faith. At this board meeting last month, however, commissioners directed me to seek a different arrangement, which was discussed here, and I also had the chance to share in writing that the commissioners directed me to come up with a different solution. So I appreciate your frustration. We have been able to make available an interim space. And as you know, we took very significant action to make available the space we had. But we've been directed to create a solution that works for both groups of people. I realize that it may not be what everyone wants. I think you've probably heard today from the Friends of Parkside who have concerns about it as well. We've acted in good faith. We're going to continue to act in good faith and at the direction of our commissioners. And hopefully we can reach a conclusion with this that allows you to have the space that you should get and that we've been working hard to get for you.
Is the board willing to meet with the resident council of Villages of Parkside? That was the request and the language regarding that. And they were trying to communicate to the residents what was going on. And by having that meeting canceled because they could not access space, you know, the board really should meet with. And that's all my request was. So, Mr. Jameson, no disrespect to you, but that's what the request is.
So we have a majority of the board here, but not all the members of the board. My inclination, I'll speak for myself, the commissioners can weigh in. My inclination is the Friends of Parkside still have to have their board meeting. There's a proposal on the table about space sharing. I would like that to reach its conclusion, have the Friends of Parkside have the ability to discuss with their board. If we're able to reach agreement, then my hope is that's not needed and we move forward. If we're unable to reach agreement on this space by next meeting, then I'm certainly open to considering that. We have open meetings requirements, right? We have sort of people's schedules that we have to deal with. We have a regularly scheduled board meeting. But I would expect this to be on the next board meeting agenda. And if we have resolution on it, but at least I as a commissioner am not going to insert myself into the middle of this right now. It's not an appropriate thing for a commissioner to do while we're in the middle of discussions with two different groups. I think that would be my recommendation, at least the position I'm at, but I don't speak for the full board.
So we are dealing with two different groups.
Where?
Yes. Friends of Parkside and Resident.
There's a proposal on the table for how they would share space at Parkside, how that would be negotiated between the two of them. Mr. Rowe just stated that they have a board meeting coming up this week, next week?
Next week.
So they would meet next week for them to discuss it. My inclination would be to not run roughshod over the proposal, let the parties discuss with their constituencies, back to Mr. Jemison to discuss, and if we are not resolved by next month's meeting, we can have a discussion about whether or not we want to intercede. I'm also a little hesitant without the other commissioners here to sort of make that decision.
And I'm not sure what the question is. Are they asking for us to intercede or just listen? If they want to, they're saying they would just like for us to listen, I think this is the appropriate space during a board meeting where it's an open conversation. And so whatever board meeting you all would
There's not equal footing with resident council and a nonprofit entity. So I guess I'm confused because resident council and residents have a...
Ms. Angela, you want to unmute there?
No, we...
Oh, we can. Okay.
Are you muting me?
Well, we can't have but, I don't think this is the appropriate forum for this kind of back and forth. But I think, hopefully, you've heard Commissioner Seibert say that if we're unable to reach a conclusion on this by the next board meeting, they will make a decision at the next board meeting about whether they have that listening session. And it will probably be something like this because of open meeting laws. So, Ms. Pruitt, hopefully you feel like your request has been heard and has been a recommended action.
Thank you very much.
Okay, do everyone else online?
We have Mr. Lee Booker.
Julie for Goodwin. Julie for Goodwin, you're off mute, but we cannot hear you. Julie for Goodwin, can you hear us? You're off mute, but we cannot hear you. Okay, unfortunately, Goodwin, we cannot hear you, so perhaps we'll come back to you. Tam, is there anyone else signed up? Last one. Right, Ms. Goodwin, maybe one more time, I'll just ask if you can perhaps put yourself on speakerphone, or for some reason we can't hear you. You are off of mute, but we cannot hear you. Okay, well, unfortunately, I think we're going to move on. Anyone else in the chat? Okay. All right, we will bring public comment to a close then. On to Commissioner comments. Commissioner Rensher, Commissioner Williams.
I'd like to thank everyone for being here. Very interesting. I'm looking something good now. Welcome. Your job is gonna be easy. You got it. But thank everyone for a good job. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Comments from staff? Okay. With that, oh, so close to being out of time. Could I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.